Welcome to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life. My name is Tracy Crow. I'm an author, writing coach, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm looking forward to co-creating today's show with you. So if you're ready, are you ready? I'm ready. So if you're ready to live a more creative, more magical life, let's get started. Thank you for returning. This is episode 29 of Accept Your Gifts, and it is May. May, my favorite month of the year, and perhaps I'll share a few reasons why in upcoming episodes, but whatever happened to April, I just don't even know. I mean, that month blew through here and out so fast, it's all just a blur, but I'm not complaining. Because it's May and my favorite month. Listen, I know another two people who are especially thankful April 2019 is now in their rearview mirror. You see, every April of their marriage has tested their relationship, and you're about to discover why today, how they discovered this pattern, and how they're coping one April at a time. So my special guest today is Elizabeth Torres Evans, Liz to all of us who know and dearly love her. I first met Liz and her husband Chester a few years ago when I'd been invited to speak at a North Carolina event that was commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. You see, Chester is also a Marine Corps veteran, as am I, but Chester saw combat in Vietnam. Soon after that event, I was leading a writing workshop for women veterans and women military family members and met Liz again. Liz had been journaling for years about her marriage to Chester and their journey together of understanding and surviving Chester's post-traumatic stress from Vietnam. Now, Liz was ready to write a memoir, and after that day-long workshop, she and three other special women from that day forward formed a writing group they named Dispatches from Carolina. And these women have been working with me now for more than 2 years. You've already heard from one of these special women, Antoinette Toscano, in episodes 16 and 17. Remember, Antoinette talked about how writing led to self-empowerment, and she even shared an excerpt of her gripping memoir, In Progress. Today, we'll hear from Liz, who will share what life is often like for family members of our veterans who are challenged with post-traumatic stress. You see, we're just beginning to understand the depth and breadth of the cross-generational impact of military service. I am so honored to be a part of this journey with Liz and Chester Evans. They are both so brave to be willing to share their journey with all of us. Their chief hope is that by sharing their story, others will feel validated and hopeful, and that a happy ending is truly possible. And be sure to return next week for episode 30 when Liz will read a gripping excerpt from her memoir, In Progress. So now, let's settle in and listen to Liz Torres Evans. Hello, Liz. Thank you so much for joining us today on Accept Your Gifts.
Hi, Tracy. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, it's so good. You're my sister from another mother. You know that, right?
You know that. And hey, Liz, I know it?
Do I know it? I know. You know, Liz, I've already told our listeners a little bit about you and a little bit about how we met. And the main reason I'm so eager, besides I get a chance to see you through this Zoom, the main reason I really wanted to bring you on this show is because we so often hear about post-traumatic stress challenges as they affect our military veterans. But, you know, we're just beginning, I think, to understand the depth and breadth of that impact on our military family members, spouses such as you. And so I'm wondering, will you share with our listeners what this journey as the wife of a Vietnam veteran challenged with post-traumatic stress, what has this been like?
That's a really good question, Tracy, because I think when I look back at what I thought I knew and then what I discovered over the years, I didn't have a clue. Mm. I was very intuitive at the time. I thought I understood military life because I had been a military brat. I'd been raised, you know, on military bases or near military bases and overseas. So I thought I knew the veteran experience, but I had read about PTSD, but I didn't understand underlying causes of post-traumatic stress. And my husband was in counseling at the time. So there was things that he would share with me about the counseling experience, but of course he couldn't, you know, share everything because it was a confidential situation that he was in. But what I started to observe, and one of the reasons I started journaling, was I observed that there was different times of the year that his stress seemed and his depression seemed stronger than others. And he had told me there would be certain months out of the year, April in particular, you know, traumatic for him because April had been when he had been wounded in Vietnam. But I think as our trust grew with one another and times when he was fragile and he would share some of the details with me, I got to the point where I wished he hadn't. And I didn't recognize that right away until I started experiencing my own fragility and my own anger issues sometimes with him or with life in particular. I felt like I was experiencing some of that stress secondarily. But I think at the time I was in the beginning of our marriage, in the first years, I was mostly concerned about him, but it wasn't until an event happened in about halfway through our marriage and we had a huge blow up and I thought our marriage was ending that I realized I had been chronicling that particular month incidences where he was angry or depressed or had a blow up, whether directed at me or someone else. And I mentioned it to him and it gave him pause because then he realized that three particular significant life changes had happened in April, which was the month this incident had happened. And he said, I left my first wife in April. Oh. I left my second wife in April. Mm. And then of course he was wounded in April. Mm-hmm. So it made us realize that there was a pattern and I kicked myself because I didn't recognize it. And sure enough, when I went back in my journals and saw that different instances in different years, April was a time when he was particularly sensitive. And when there had been blowups,
let me stop you just a second. Can you, for our listeners who aren't quite familiar with how an episode of post-traumatic stress might manifest or what that might look like, and it's you know likely different in a lot of different circumstances. It's not just our military veterans who are experiencing post-traumatic stress. I mean, statistics say that 70% of the world at some point is affected by some form of post-traumatic stress. But in Chester's situation with your marriage, could you elaborate a little bit about what some of those episodes might look like?
So in the beginning, in the first years, I noticed that he would just go quiet. He became more introverted. He bunkerized, what I call bunkerizing. He wouldn't socialize. He wouldn't, he didn't want to go out to dinner. And if we did go out to dinner, he was hypervigilant. Every movement, he had to sit with his back to the door, that, you know, things that you hear about with veterans. Right. But what I noticed, and I think I even wrote a letter about it, was that he didn't speak to me for maybe a whole day. We'd been in the house together. He would come by and touch me wherever I was, or say maybe a word or two, but we wouldn't have a conversation. And we would go through a whole day like that, as if I wasn't there, but I was, and so was he, and we acknowledged one another. But I didn't interrupt that quietness that he seemed to need at that time. I think I was vigilant too of him wanting that space. He made a comment to me one time early on in our relationship, and I want to say after we were married, I don't want to be alone, but I want to be left alone. And I'm a very social, touchy-feely person. I'm very family oriented. He has a family that he loves, but he's happy to be away and he's happy to be separate. And there are certain times of the year when I would watch that happen. I would watch him become more quiet and more more introverted. When he's not depressed, he's very outgoing. He's very charming. I mean, you know him.
I know he is. We all loved him.
So the violence part of it, or the anger part of it, would flare, maybe driving, maybe in the house. I remember one moment where he told me, don't move this table. And I moved it because he left it. We had gotten a new kitchen table. We had this old maple table. And I just moved it to a different corner of the room to be out of the path. Mm-hmm. He came home and saw it, and he got so angry, he broke the table in two. Cursing and, you know, directed toward me as if, why would you move it? I told you not to move it. And that was hard to watch. That was the first time I'd seen anger and that kind of violence directed, you know, not at me, toward me, but around me, and the verbal abuse to a certain extent. The other time that I'm sorry.
Let me ask you this real quick. What have you learned about post-traumatic stress and how it shows in Chester that you think he was compensating for the fact that the table was moved? Is there any one thing? Was it a control thing? Was it like a whereabouts or a knowing of all the boundaries? I'll stop and let you just...
Oh, you know, and it's so true. What he told me later when we talk about it is, don't move the furniture, or if you move the furniture, let me know, because if we have to escape, if we're under attack, I need to know where every piece is. I need to know where the guns are. I need to know that where the exit is. And in that house, we had two exits. We had the French doors where I had put the table, and then we had the front door. And he had put the table kind of in the middle of the room where both accesses were available. So,
oh my goodness. That makes so much sense when you think of, oh, I know. Oh my goodness.
It's the things you find out later, you know. Yes. It's the things you find out, you know, and so I learned when he would go away, I would say, oh, by the way, I got a new coffee table, you know, and he would go, okay, well, I'll get used to it. I mean, it was those incidents that kind of, you know, informed one another that I was going to redecorate and change things around, but I just needed to let him know, which was hard, I think, in the beginning for me. It's something I had to adapt to. The other instance that I think that comes to mind was what happened in April, what set him off. And that was just because he couldn't fix the TV. It was a direct TV issue. That's what I call it. It was the direct TV incident where he couldn't fix the TV. It was acting up. So I needed to call, because he's a non-reader. I needed to call and need to talk to them, get all the numbers, input whatever they needed to do, and go through that spiel. But the incident had happened with the front TV. The TV was malfunctioning in the front room. He went to watch TV in the back room. And the tech had me go to the back TV and change it, or shut it down and start it up again. Well, apparently when I shut it down, he just flew off the handle. When I got off the phone, he was so angry. And I'm like defending myself. You wanted me to fix the TV. I was trying to fix the TV. But it was the first time in our marriage, you know, the room, because it was so intense and I felt threatened that I thought, okay, this is over. But it was when I discovered that April was so sensitive that we were going to have to do something different, you know, whether it was just be more aware or him take more medication. But I think when I brought that up to him about what I had observed in other Aprils, what I had written down but hadn't recognized a pattern, I think that's what kind of made him feel, okay, I have to recognize it too. He saw in himself that he had to recognize that there was going to be times when his emotions were going to flare and where his depression was going to be more intense than others. And over time, he used tools from counseling that also helped me with my issues, because I used to ask him, when do I get to be angry? You won't let me, I don't feel like I can like come back and just say, well, wait a minute, I did this for this reason, or what about me? I really felt that probably around that time, year 8 going forward. And I think he understood that, because he understood that in order to help him, he had to help me. He had to at least acknowledge that there was some pain that I was going through because of the pain that he was going through.
Liz, as a wife, I mean, do you feel that this is that big piece that most family members are so challenged by? Because, you know, you don't want to enable, but you also want to set your own boundaries. But at the same time, you love this person and you, I mean, oh, I'm not even sure what question I'm trying to ask. Other than I'm so thrilled that you're writing about this journey and all of your self-discoveries, because of what I really feel this book will do for so many others.
I have to say that one of the reasons I got serious about writing this book was the April incident, but it was also in around that time, or not long after, the Cherry Point murder suicides that happened, I think, 4 families. And I thought, who is counseling these people? Who's doing the reentry for these people? Who are helping the wives understand that these soldiers that are coming back need time, need space? You know, as a wife, you want, like, oh my God, you're home. Please take over. Please do this. You know, I watched my mom and dad do that dance when she was a Navy wife, you know, and she would handle everything till he got back. And then she had to kind of step back. And as a Hispanic couple, you know, traditional marriage, you know, she had to do that dance where she was kind of a liberated woman before liberation even happened in the 60s. She was being left while he went on deployment in the late 50s and early 60s. So I watched that dance with her. So I knew there was a change that happened when active duty personnel came home and integrated back in the family and, you know, picked up. I also knew, I think, because my youngest daughter is active duty, that there is a certain transition that they go through or that they resist because they're no longer deployed. They're no longer in a dangerous situation. They're no longer in that camaraderie of their sailors, soldiers, Marines. They're back in civilian life. And there is this disconnect with civilians and active duty personnel. And it's like, and there's a certain amount of arrogance about it. Oh, they don't get what we're going through. And some of them don't. I mean, you know, when you look at the service members and what our service members number in comparison to civilian personnel, you realize there is a bit of a disconnect. And I think anything that can inform not just wives and families, but civilians would be helpful in recognizing we have people that are walking around this. You don't know where they've been. You don't know what they've done. And you don't know what they're capable of doing. And I'm not saying that as a threat. I'm just saying it we're dealing with a lot of veterans with post-traumatic stress out in our world. We think of them as the World War II or maybe, but our Afghan, Iraqi vets, our women, our mothers, mm-hmm. you know, so we're dealing with a huge community of people that are struggling and their families that are struggling with them.
What have you learned in this process? What advice would you give other wives, other family members, children, others? I mean, just in general. Well, and also I'm eager to know, besides that April incident, where's that turning point been for you? Because I know you two as a couple, and I know you're quite a strong woman. So I'm also eager for our listeners to hear about when that turn happened.
Well, let me answer your first question, because I think do what I didn't do, go to counseling, go to family counseling, go to wives counseling, or go to a group, get a group. I had 6 weeks of counseling with the wives in my husband's group that was offered to us. And it just scratched the surface, six visits. And I think that, and we did it as a group, just like the guys did. And I realized that was something that we needed to do. And I tried to take that group forward and do it, you know, at my office and have the same women come, you know, and invite a counselor to come speak with us. But one by one, the women fell off, not unlike what happens with the men's group sometime, you know, otherwise, but they're mandated to go pretty much, you know, they have to go, they have their prescription to go. But the wives, we didn't have anything but ourselves motivating us. And I would recommend go to counseling or get a support group for wives and mothers, because mothers, I think, recognize more than anyone that their child has changed. Even though they're grown, they realize that the person that left to go into the military or that left on deployment came back different. And I think mothers need that help as well and need that understanding. Fathers too, siblings, I would say the whole family, but mothers and wives, I think are key, because they're the nourishing, the supportive in most cases, you know. But you also have fathers that are retired military that have sons and daughters that go in the military too. And I think they more than anyone recognize what their adult child has gone through, what their service member has gone through. And the pivotal, I think, time for Chester and I, aside from that April moment, because we realized, you know, going forward that there would be anniversaries, was an incident that happened. We were at the airport when the car rental was off away from the airport, and it was a dark, rainy night, and Chester had picked up our car or taken me to pick up a car, and he was going to follow me home, and then we were going to take that car and I think go somewhere. I was going somewhere. I don't remember the incident. But I got in that car and went the wrong way down a driveway or down a road, and there was cars coming at me. And I thought I was on a two lane, but I was actually in the wrong lane going in the opposite direction. Yeah. And he watched it happen. And he's thinking, oh my gosh, she's going to get killed. So when he told me later, he didn't speak to me when I got home. He was so angry with me. He didn't speak to me. And he said, that's when I realized how much I loved you. He said, aww. What am I going to do now? He said, because she's going to be gone.
We need tissues.
But before he... before we had that pivot moment, it was like he was mad. He was mad that you made me. He goes, this, he said, this feeling stuff is hard. He says, it's angry feels good some, you know, most times. He said, but this love stuff, he said, this is hard. He said, but that's when I realized how important you were to me. And don't you ever do that again. You know, I mean, that's,
yeah, we Marines are a little hard to crack sometimes.
Tell you guys, you know,
I love him.
There's a book all about that somewhere, you know. But yeah, that was, I think, a pivotal in not only just the recognition of how important our relationship was and what we meant to each other. I had been in for a long time, and I think he knew that. I think he knew when I made a point to point out to him the April incidences that she's been paying attention. You know, she's just not here for the check or whatever. I don't know.
Okay, well, now let's switch a little bit and let's talk about the writing journey through all of this, because I am seeing this book come together. And our little workshop, we're always stunned and amazed by what you bring every time. But you've also surprised yourself a few times with a few self-discoveries that this writing process has led you to. So can you share a little bit about what the writing process has meant for you?
I can. I've always journaled, as I said, but being involved with a writing group, and I cannot tell you, being involved with Dispatches from Carolina has just been, I think, the most eye-opening experience that I've had in a long time. I was beginning to become more creative and self-aware, but I didn't have, I think, the support that I needed to kind of open up and have the instruction that you give, which has been priceless. But listening to all of us kind of share our writing and our stories made me brave. I finally got brave and was able to kind of speak about things that I didn't realize were probably at the core of some of the reactions and some of the processing that I did with my husband's post-traumatic stress. I think a lot of had to do with my background and my past, but I think also becoming more creative and self-aware gave me focus on my own path and my own choices, and gave me a sense of more power with creativity and with self-expression that I hadn't had before. It also was very self-revealing. And I think when you peel away the layers and find the source of your joy and your pain and your conflict, it only informs you better going forward, because then you understand. You have an understanding of, this happened for this reason, and this is why I'm behaving this way. This is something that maybe we need to take and reevaluate and change. Because just because it has gotten you this far doesn't necessarily mean it's good behavior. It doesn't necessarily mean it's beneficial. I learned that, I think, in this marriage more than anything else. But I also learned through my writing that my gifts and my outlook have blossomed into something I didn't expect. And that was an understanding of my own pain and feelings about my husband, and understanding his pain. And his pain, I feel, is multi-layered, like any of us can be. So being able to be aware and be empathetic to all of that and have an understanding really informed my writing and informed my self-expression.
With this book, what would you say at this point is your wish as a takeaway for readers?
My wish has always been that this will help my readers see that there are tools. There are, I'm not going to call it success stories. I don't want to say there's successes and failures. There is growth in post-traumatic stress. Right. There is growth, there is resolution, there is happiness. There's always going to be PTSD in your spouse or in your loved one. Chester has an expression, I don't have PTSD, PTSD has me. If I could give this shit away, I'd give it away right now. And I think I understand that he's just gotten better. He made a decision. I don't want to be that veteran that can't grow, that is marginalized, that can't live. That's what I want people to take away from this, that you can be happy, you can have PTSD, and you can have life.
Wonderful. I'm so excited that you're going to be reading excerpts from your memoir in progress. But before That will be for our part two of this, but I also want you to address or share with us, what does Chester think about you writing this story?
There's been times I capture him in the car on road trips and I'll read an excerpt and he goes, oh my gosh, you're going to tell them about that. And I go, yes. And then, but then he'll say, you need to put this in your book. So he, yes. And a lot of my book is stuff that I would write on scraps of envelopes, not just in the journals, but things that he would say when we were on these road trips, things that he would say when we were just talking at the table. Then I got smart and started recording him. So I have some of this recorded. But he is now informing me, this needs to go in the book. And then he tells me, you need to write another book, you know, because it can't be just about the beginning. It has to be about the now. So it's going to be interesting to watch how this thing evolves, but because I can see that there's more to write, you know, and I hope to do it.
Well, that's because there's so much of Liz and Chester. Everybody loves Liz and Chester. Well, Liz, thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm looking forward to our listeners hearing your excerpts in part two.
Thank you, Tracy. It's been a joy to be here.
Love you, sweetheart.
Love you too.
I hope you enjoyed today's co-creative listening experience. Please remember to leave a comment about the single greatest takeaway for you today. You know, that one thing you will remember from this day forward. Was it something funny or provocative? Was it just what you needed to hear? Please share so we can all benefit. And remember to return Tuesdays and Thursdays to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life.